Welcome to Swiss Educ. My name is Hans Fischer, and my guest is Stevie C. Pierre. Welcome, Mr. Pierre.
Thank you very much.
Vernon God Little was your first book, and right away it made the Man Booker Prize. That's quite an achievement. Congratulations.
Thanks.
What made you write this book?
Many things. I guess there are two levels. Personally, I'd had a very dissolute life, and I was very frustrated and very angry. I tried to be an artist for many years. I was a visual artist, and it never quite worked out. And so on one hand, I was looking for some way to express myself. On the other hand, the book was triggered because I got angry with the culture around me, that is the English-speaking culture. And I started to see that, in my view, the culture was being overheated by commerce and by unrealistic expectations, and I was very angry. And the book was actually triggered by a very short news clip on TV. I saw a teenager being put into the back of a police car, and he'd obviously taken a gun to school. I could tell. I couldn't hear the sound for the clip, but you could tell that this is what had happened. And I started to imagine what might be going through his head, and started to imagine the circumstances around him. And really that day I wrote a page in Vernon's voice and just kept going.
Okay, so you're criticizing the legal system we have? Or?
Well, it's strange, you know, because it ended up being not so much a critique as an observation, and it's not even a direct observation of American culture so much as the way we perceive it through TV. And the book is even constructed like a B-grade movie in its plot.
Mm. Since with we, you mean English-speaking?
Yes,
English,
I mean the Anglos.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Anglos. I hold all of us complicit since the Industrial Revolution in hyping things up to this level of consumer madness. And it was just, I was fascinated on the one hand by the way we perceive America, and I came to see that the impression we have of America is quite wrong, in a sense. I have a love affair with America since I was a kid, and I'd spent quite a lot of time there with my parents as a child. And it's a very different place to be in than it is to observe from outside. And I think it's partly because there we see much more the effects of American foreign policy at government level, which is one thing. But in terms of the culture, I start to realize that we're only sold the most sensational bits and pieces. We only get the really sensational stuff on TV, and it's because that's profitable, and we rarely hear about that 99% of America that ticks away in a reasonable fashion. And so the book was really a construction of all those sensational things and concepts. It's as if I'd taken every crazy TV show and every mad newspaper article from the States, put them all back to back into a plot, and then threw a regular kid in the middle to see if he sank or swam.
So the actual life in America is better than what you portray in your book.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this is an observed life made up of the things that we're sold, really, through the TV.
Vernon's middle name is God, and LaSalle tells him, "You are the God." And his friend's name, the real killer's name, is Jesus. Why did you choose these names?
You'll note also that Vernon's town is called Martirio, and there are some biblical references. And actually, in the first draft, the book was even more referenced to the Bible. And it was, in a way, because I started out seeing Vernon as a kind of martyr for the whole of society. There was a real... Things obviously weren't working. Things obviously weren't right in the culture around him. And all the characters in the book are very, very... quick to want to hoist him up onto a cross. And I started out with more references, actually, to suggest the Bible story. And then as the drafts progressed, I took most of them back out and just left a couple of key ones. But it was really for that. It was to suggest that it was a modern day martyrdom in very similar fashion.
Once Vernon says, you can only be yourself when you have nothing left to lose. How should we understand this?
It's interesting. That's a personal observation of mine. And there is something, there's some great freedom, you know, I've observed in having nothing to lose. When you really are stripped of material resources and supports, I really think there is a great freedom in having nothing left to lose. And it's kind of a little discovery of mine, but there's, whether you call it being backed against a wall, or when you get into a situation where there's really only one way to go is up or out, there's quite some freedom there. And I was in that position when I started writing that book. I'd been unemployed for a number of years. I couldn't get a job. Really, there was, you know, there wasn't much I could do in the culture I found myself in. And I just gave a little bit of that to Vernon. In the end, everything's been taken away. He's under so much guilt and in so much trouble that he has nothing to lose. And this is where he finds himself. This is where he finds enough spirit and anger to come back up. And it's true, we are made docile, and we're made polite by comfort and by the trappings of any certain wealth. And I think if you take all that away, you can really be, or you have to decide who you are, if you're going to lay down and die, or if you're going to stand up and head off in a direction.
Let's go to the end of the book. Vernon is saved at the very last moment from being put to death, and it's shipped in the literal sense, in the form of that paper he claimed his behind with that saved him. Is that symptomatic, or should we read anything into that?
The ending is in the style of just the type of movie I was trying to imitate, and one that the style of movie that Vernon himself refers to throughout the book. You know, that he's been raised, all his morals and his life ethics seem to come from TV movies. Mm-hmm. And hence he has a strong sense of the happy ending syndrome. And he spends the book kind of waiting for this happy ending. And of course it doesn't come until he acts. But I wanted the thing to have the same kind of implausible, sudden triumph. And in, I guess, the fact that he is literally saved by shit, and literally the shit which is his evidence, his alibi for not having been at the scene of this crime, was my most bitter touch. Because it's quite a bitter and angry book about that this should even happen, that so much pressure should be on kids that they get into that position and run amok with guns. And that was my final bitter flourish, if you like, that really he's saved in the end by the media and by greed and by all the worst qualities that have gotten him into trouble in the first place. And he's saved by them because suddenly there is some kind of financial and worldly glory attached to finding his shit. And at the end of the day, that's all the media is interested in, is looking at the colour of people's shit. And I wanted to suggest that in a very literal way. I know it's quite brutal and bitter in a way, but I think it worked for me in the context of the story.
Mr. Pierre, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.